Yes, you're correct. I am a member of the ABBS board. And again, as Glenn mentioned yesterday evening, we would love to have members of SABR join our organization. There are no dues currently. So we're happy to have anybody join that's interested in baseball and interested in biomechanics. My name is Hillary Plummer. I am a biomechanist and athletic trainer. I am currently doing a fellowship with the Department of Defense, but most of my previous research has been in youth and high school baseball players looking at their mechanics. Today, I'm going to be talking about the association between hip rotational range of motion and pitching mechanics in high school baseball pitchers. We have no financial disclosures related to this work, and all opinions expressed in this presentation are the authors and do not necessarily reflect the policies and views of the Department of Defense, Department of Energy, or ORISE. So last night, the panel did a great job giving a basic intro into what biomechanics is, how it's used at the major league level, and starting to get into discussing the kinetic chain. And as Glenn said, we biomechanists, we love the kinetic chain. So what is the kinetic chain? The body is broken down into different segments that all interdependently act together. If you see the picture on the right, you can see that when a pitcher's pitching, energy is generated from the ground up to the lower extremities, through the pelvis, the trunk, and then it's funneled to the scapula, to the shoulder, the elbow, wrist, hand, and ultimately to the ball. So in order to optimize ball velocity, we need all these segments to interact appropriately, generate energy. Each segment is going to have increased velocity as you go up the kinetic chain from the ground up. And it's been previous research has stated that efficient proximal contributions in energy generation and transfer can provide from the lower extremity provides about 50 to 55% of the total energy generated in the pitch. So any dysfunction at the lower extremity or the hip can lead to increased forces at the shoulder and the elbow, because if energy is lost at the hip and into the trunk, then the shoulder and the elbow have to work harder to make up for that lost energy in order to impart the same ball velocity. So previous research has found that the stride leg or your lead leg generates about 1.75 times body weight of energy during this whole kinetic chain process. So over time, you can imagine that your body's going to adapt to the stresses that are placed on it, and range of motion deficits can occur. So in pitchers, a lot of times what we see is they're going to have decreased internal rotation of their hips, and sometimes they develop increased external rotation. Sometimes it decreases. It really just depends on the pitcher. So a lot of energy is going through the hip, and it's really critical for that energy generation up the kinetic chain. So this study and other studies, this Rob et al. Study was a study out of Glenn Fleissig's group at ASMI, which was basically the inspiration for the current study. They looked at the relationship between hip rotational range of motion and pitching kinematics in professional pitchers. We wanted to replicate that and see if we could find some of the same things that they did in a younger population at the high school level. So what they found was the stride leg decreased total range of motion, increased stride leg rotational range of motion correlated with ball velocity. It was a pretty strong correlation of 0.5 and it was significant. And they also found that this increased stride leg range of motion also correlated with trunk separation velocity. And then looking at the other leg, the drive leg, so the back leg of the pitcher, there was a positive correlation with pelvic orientation. So pitchers who had increased drive leg rotational range of motion were in a more open position of their pelvis. So they were more facing home plate earlier in the pitching motion than they would if they had a less range of motion. Then another study by Kevin Laudner et al. In 2015 looked at, found that decreased hip range of motion was associated with greater shoulder forces. And another study by Oliver et al. Found that pitchers who had decreased hip range of motion also had altered scapular mechanics. So they had decreased posterior tilt, which is important for funneling those forces through the shoulder to the elbow and onto the ball. And more recent studies in the past year have associated decreased hip range of motion as being a risk factor for upper extremity injury. So all these studies have shown that, you know, the hip does seem to play a pretty critical role in energy transfer and potentially injury risk. So the purpose of our study was to examine the association of hip rotational range of motion on lower extremity and trunk mechanics during pitching in high school pitchers. Our hypothesis was that pitchers who had decreased total range of motion, which is the sum of internal and external rotation, would have altered lower extremity and trunk mechanics. We had 25 high school baseball pitchers who were approximately 15 to 16 years old. They were all from the Auburn, Alabama area. They had no injury within the past 6 months and no history of surgery on either the upper or the lower extremity. So for our methods, we obtained consent and immediately after obtaining consent, we measured their hip range of motion. There are different ways to measure hip range of motion. Some people will look at range of motion with the participant lying on their stomach. We chose to do seated. This can result in increased compressive forces at the hip, which can lower some of the values that we get, but we feel like this is more related to pitching than lying on your stomach. So the top picture illustrates hip external rotation range of motion. And with this, we make sure they're sitting up tall so that their trunk position doesn't potentially affect the motion that we're getting at the hip. And then the bottom picture illustrates hip internal rotation. We used a digital inclinometer and passive range of motion was obtained to get a true physiological assessment of the motion. For our mechanical data, we used an electromagnetic tracking system or a flock of birds to collect our mechanical data. We had 14 sensors throughout the body on all the major joints. And if you look at the picture to the right, this isn't necessarily something, a type of a tracking system that most people are familiar with. As you can see, it does have cords. It's not markerless. It's not the reflective markers. So a little bit different, but it does collect the same data. They do put their shirts on. We do wrap up the cords to try to eliminate, you know, any distractions that the cords may have, but it's definitely something that could have an effect on their pitching motion. We had the pitchers perform their warm-up routine, and then when they deemed themselves ready to pitch, we began testing. We had them throw 3 maximal effort four-seam fastballs to a catcher from a mound located at the regulation distance. And for the study, the lead leg was defined as our stride leg, so our front leg, and then the back leg was our drive leg. For our hip and trunk kinematic variables, we looked at the mean average of these variables in the arm cocking phase. So stride foot contact to maximum shoulder external rotation. For our foot positioning variables and stride length variables, we looked at the point of stride foot contact only. We took the mean of all 3 trials for each variable. And we also did a paired samples t-test to compare total range of motion between the legs, just because we know from previous research that sometimes one leg may have greater range of motion than the other. So we wanted to see if that was the case in our sample. And we also did Pearson correlation coefficients for hip total range of motion and our pitching mechanics. So mean ball velocity in our sample was about 70 miles an hour, plus or minus 4.6. We found no difference between the drive hip and the stride hip. Total range of motion, as you can see, the drive leg had about 58 degrees, the stride leg had about 57. So they were really pretty symmetrical, which was a little surprising to us. And when looking at our correlations from drive leg range of motion to our ball velocity and stride leg and pelvic and trunk kinematics, we see that most of our correlations were really pretty small. None of them were significant. We did have a trend towards significance for trunk rotation. There was a correlation of 0.39 with a p-value of 0.053. So not quite significant, but there was that trend. If we remember from the Robb et al. Study, they found a significant negative correlation with pelvis rotation and drive leg total arc of motion. But again, we didn't see that. The only thing that was close for us was the trunk rotation. So a little farther up the chain than what they saw with the pelvis, but this may be something that we need to look at further. And for the stride leg, again, you can see we had really small correlations. Nothing was significant and nothing approached significance in this sample of high school baseball pitchers. So again, just reviewing some of the results, the Robb et al, they found that professional level pitchers had less hip external rotation, internal rotation, and total rotational range of motion in the stride leg compared to the drive leg. Our results, we had symmetrical range of motion between legs. In their study, they found that they saw that as drive leg total range of motion increased, the pelvis was in a more open position at foot contact. So they're rotating maybe a little bit too early and potentially having a break in their kinetic chain that could have resulted in increased forces up the kinetic chain at the shoulder and the elbow. And they also saw a positive correlation between stride leg range of motion and ball velocity. Again, we did not see any positive correlations between range of motion and ball velocity in either the stride or the drive legs. We did see kind of a trend as our drive leg range of motion increased. Trunk rotation towards home plate also showed a trend towards increasing as well. So they may have been opening up, some of the pitchers may have been opening their trunk up more towards home plate a little bit earlier in the motion than they should have, which could have resulted in increased forces about the shoulder and the elbow. Our future research, we are trying to look at if there were increased kinetics at the shoulder and the elbow based on their amount of range of motion, but that's something we haven't gotten to quite yet. And we know that as the trunk rotates towards home plate during the cocking phase, it eventually gets square towards the plate at maximum external rotation. Maybe our, like I said, maybe our pitchers rotated a little too early. We're not quite sure about that. Something we have to examine further. So pitchers with decreased hip range of motion may be in a more open position. This could be altered rotational timing. So improper sequencing, inefficient segmental sequencing of the kinetic chain. Those are things we need to keep looking at. So when comparing our results to the Robb et al. Study, it is important to note that they did look at range of motion a little bit different than us. They were lying down versus seated. But one of the things we found that was interesting when looking at total range of motion between our studies was whereas our results were pretty symmetrical between the drive leg and the stride leg. They were a little bit lower than what was presented in pro pitchers. However, these pro pitchers in the Robb et al. Study had a pretty significant asymmetry between legs, which we found was interesting. This could maybe explain why they saw some results in kinematics and hip rotational range of motion that we didn't necessarily see. So maybe it's an asymmetry thing that is contributing. So in conclusion, why is this research important? We know that injury rates in baseball pitchers continue to increase, especially at some of the lower levels. We're seeing a lot of high school kids that are now having Tommy John surgery. It's definitely become an epidemic. So we're really trying to understand injury risk factors in these younger populations so that we could eventually identify what these factors are and then develop training programs to address any deficits that they may have that could be contributing to injuries. So ultimately, we're really hoping to decrease the risk of injury and eventually, and hopefully at the same time, improve their performance. If we can improve their segmental sequencing, if they have better energy flow throughout the body, then we expect that they're going to have better ball velocity, which is obviously optimal for performance. So this is definitely an area we're continuing to look at, and hopefully we'll find something interesting soon. And thank you. All right. So questions. So from Phil, given that each pitcher only threw three pitches, I imagine that you weren't able to determine the impact pitcher fatigue has on hip rotation. Does fatigue impact hip rotation and therefore the other steps in the chain negatively? that is something that, from a range of motion standpoint, the Oliver et al. Study did look at a simulated game. So they had youth pitchers come in and I think throw maybe, they threw up to whatever their age-related pitch count was. And they did find that range of motion did decrease in these pitchers at the end of the simulated game. And they also found that their scapular kinematics did change, which was most likely due to fatigue. Megan, how would you go about observing high school female baseball pitchers with slightly different builds, like thinner pelvises and wider hips? That's an interesting question. I've actually never tested a female baseball pitcher before. I think range of motion wise, females typically have greater flexibility range of motion than males do. So I would suspect that, their range of motion would be a little bit higher than the male pitchers that we see. But I'm not sure there's a big enough sample size of female baseball pitchers to really study that at this time. Christian, studies have shown that shorter stride by pitchers lead to more injuries. Did you find any evidence of this or anything similar to that? We didn't see a relationship between stride length and their hip range of motion. We haven't necessarily looked at do shorter strides cause greater forces at the elbow. That's not something that we've looked at yet, but that's definitely an interesting point. David Hughes asked, you hear the term flying open often when a pitcher's command is deteriorating. Is this due to excessive hip rotation or some other factors? I think that it probably depends on the level of the athlete. The Rob et al. Study, you could probably say that by having increased range of motion, their pelvis was flying open. Not necessarily their trunk, but if there was still a breakdown in that kinetic chain, that definitely could have contributed. But again, we didn't see the same thing in the high school age group. Scott Willard, what other range of motion factors or measurements could potentially correlate to injuries? That's a really great question. We only looked at rotational range of motion of the hip, but there's definitely there's hip flexion, hip extension, especially if the drive leg is really critical during the stride phase of the pitch. So that's something that we're interested in looking at, as well as looking at hip strength. So there's hip flexion, hip extension strength. The Rob et al. Study did look at hip abduction and adduction. So moving the leg out to the side, which we know is, again, critical for the drive leg as you're pushing off and gaining momentum towards home plate to maximize ball velocity. So that's something that, yes, we are looking at. And could correlate to injuries. If they have decreased hip strength, they're not getting enough push off from that drive leg, it could correlate to injuries because they could be compensating somewhere else to try to make up for any lost energy that didn't come from the hip. So Sam, does a torn labrum caused by swinging suggest a breakdown in the kinetic chain or limited range of motion of a certain extremity? I haven't done a lot of hitting research. It could have potentially been that. It could have had, for a torn labrum, generally that's going to occur more of a contact mechanism, but if they do sublux or dislocate their shoulder, then there is going to be, that can cause a torn labrum. So potentially they have hypermobile shoulder that could have contributed to subluxing their shoulder and tearing their labrum. I don't necessarily know if there's going to be a relationship to anything at the hip as far as the kinetic chain causing that. I'd probably say it's more centered around the shoulder. Arnell, thank you for the question. Did you measure hip rotation and rotation velocity on the stride leg and drive legs during the pitch? And if so, did you find a relationship between range of motion and dynamic range of motion during the pitch? We did not pull that data. We do have it. I'd love to talk to you about that and get your thoughts on it and add that. We are working on a manuscript, so any feedback we can get would be great. Emma Miller, what are the advantages of using the flock of birds system and why did you choose that method of data collection? The flock of birds is generally the gold standard for measuring shoulder motion. So we were really interested in getting scapular kinematics, and that's going to be the most accurate method of assessing scapular kinematics. And that's typically the system that Gretchen Oliver uses at Auburn, which is where we collected this data. But we do acknowledge that, you know, the cords could have, you know, have a small effect on, you know, a pitcher feeling comfortable with what they're doing during the pitch. It could have a small effect. Most of the pitchers that we ask when we use this system, if it bothers them, you know, they say they don't even really notice it once they get going. Phil, a high schooler is a growing body, whereas a pro is fully grown. What impact does age have to do with range of motion of the hip? It's a good question. I think that it's definitely something we've considered as to, you know, how does the growth and development affect it? These pro pitchers have obviously had more exposure. They've thrown more. Their hips have probably adapted more to the stresses that are placed on it. I know there's been some studies looking at bony adaptations at the hip to their contributions to range of motion. And there's obviously going to be, like you said, they're still growing. The high school players are still growing, and they don't necessarily have the same bony adaptations that the pro pitcher would have. Glenn, our study found no relationship between hip range of motion and pitch mechanics and ball velocity. Wow, Glenn's Rob et al. Study did. Do you think the difference in findings was due to the level or how the studies measured hip range of motion? I think maybe a little bit of both. Again, I think that the youth haven't necessarily had as much exposure. We did see when comparing the range of motion values between the studies, you know, we didn't see as much asymmetry as you guys did. And you guys also, your values were a little bit higher than ours, specifically for, I believe it was the drive leg that was in the 90s for the total range of motion. So yeah, that's definitely, it could be that. It could have been the measurement methods. I think you guys used a goniometer. We used an inclinometer, so that could have been part of it. Will, would a shorter hip range of motion cause a lower velocity, or does it simply add to the load placed on the shoulder and other parts of the kinetic chain? Again, I think that Rob et al. Study, they did find a correlation between stride leg range of motion and velocity. Again, we didn't see that. We would think that ideally you'd have enough range of motion to get an optimal stride, which is generally about similar to your body height. So if you have a shorter stride, then you're probably going to have a lower ball velocity. Christian Eggers, does body mass have an effect? That's not something we looked at, but obviously some people are going to have more tissue on their hip, which could cause restrictions in their hip range of motion. But that's not something that we didn't really look at BMI or anything like that to see how that would affect our range of motion variables. Most of these kids were pretty athletic, and I feel like they had similar body builds. So I'm not sure that would have affected our results, but certainly something that we can look at in the future. I got a few more minutes. Mark, pitch counts for the different ages through high school, 14, 15, 16, 17, and 18. I think all of these pitchers had the same pitch count. I'm not sure what that was off the top of my head. So I can't really answer that very well. Sorry. Would the dynamics of hip range of motion be a bit different if the pitcher started the pitching motion with more initial stride movement? I'm trying to see if the results of the study can be generalized to other pitching sports such as cricket. I'm not sure about that. That's a really good question. I don't really know how to answer that. I think that's about it.